ended off yesterday saying that hearing Sichot Musar by itself is not going to make a difference. Maybe it will give you knowledge, it will give you information, but that's not going to transform you. And reading books of Musar also is not going to make a profound difference on a person's life. The only way that a person can transform himself is if he daily takes to heart that what he's learning. He does a cheshbon nefesh. And he learns ideas, or even if he's not learning ideas, but he's thinking about interactions that he had with people and situations that he had that brought out his character traits, and he's paying attention to them and recognizing them. He has a project that he's working on and he's following himself. He has what you could call an integrity journal. Am I following something with integrity? Am I checking in with myself that I'm doing loyally, devotedly what I'm supposed to be doing? That's the only way that a person can change. And as an introduction to Or Yisrael, one of his Talmidim, Rav Yitzchak Blazer, wrote in the name of the Kadmonim, the earlier generations, that that's the way of growth, and that's the way in yeshiva, in the previous generation, they transformed their own growth through doing Cheshbon Nefesh. It was part of the Sidrei HaYeshiva. And it's something which just, if you try it, you don't need, meaning, there are some things that you know from Torah, there's some things that you know from experience, and some things that you know from Torah and from experience. It's the Torah says it, and you can just see that it works. You have both. This is an example of something which it speaks about in the Torah itself. There's a pasuk which alludes to it, and it's brought down in the Rishonim and in the Achronim, that that's the way to work on oneself and come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to perfect oneself. And it's something which you just have to try it out, and you see that it works. If a person devotes himself to learn Musar on a daily basis, he starts transforming, even if it's not that he said, I want to take this on, and I want to take that on. Even if he didn't take on specific Kabbalahs, just the fact that he's learning Musa, there's a transformation that takes place within a person, even if he's not aware of it per se. That's the famous drasha of Rabbi Akiva. The famous idea of Rabbi Akiva, that he saw the water dripping on the rock, and he said the drasha that he said. So the Mefarshim explained, like, what was so impressive to him about the water dripping on the rock? It was that each drop doesn't make a difference. Each drop doesn't make a difference. I sit there and I look and I see a drop of water fall on a rock, and it doesn't make a hole. So I can see with my own eye that a drop of water on a rock doesn't make a hole. However, I look here and I see that the water dripping on the rock has made a hole in the rock. So what does that teach me? It teaches me that sometimes there's an effect happening that the naked eye can't see, but it's having an effect. When a person learns Musa, he might say, I just learned a half an hour of Musa, I don't feel that it transformed me, I don't feel inspired. However, just like the water on the rock that inspired Rabbi Akiva, maybe the effect of each individual drip you won't be able to tell. But by learning Musa day after day after day, the water dripping again and again and again and again, it's able to make a hole in the rock and penetrate through that stone heart and enter your heart. When a person learns Musar, it could be that on a daily basis he doesn't feel that's made a transformation for him. However, with time, a person will start noticing that, yes, I can't identify which exact Seder Musar it was that was the epiphany for me. I can't do that. They were all just like normal. However, after having learned Musar daily for a period of time, I can recognize that I'm a transformed person. Mishtanehu letova mebli shi'argish bekach. He won't even recognize that it's having that effect on him. In the way that he behaves, how careful he is, what his goals and his aspirations are. I once, for a year, attended once a week shiurim on a certain topic. My wife would ask me, like, how was it? Because it was a big effort. We didn't have a car, and I would like have to get down to the bus stop and then a bus, and I had to go much earlier and come back later, and it was a big deal. But it was important to me to go to the shiurim, and I went for a year, and I would say to my wife after each shiur, I was like, I don't know, it was interesting, but nothing like amazing. And so she said, is it worth the effort? I said, I feel it is. And at the end of the year, when I looked back, and I saw, like, I had this whole area of knowledge, which I didn't have, or a skill, you might say, which I didn't have until then, I look back and I could say, if I would have missed any one shiur, I don't think I would have missed something. Like, or to put it differently, I don't feel that one shiur gave me an entirely new perspective. But after a whole year of going to the shiur and understanding this topic from so many different angles and aspects, I feel like now it's given me a whole new perspective. Sometimes when you learn, almost always when you learn Musar, it doesn't have a transformative effect. There are very unique times when it does. I once heard an amazing story of one time that it did. And I heard this story in many different formats, because it happened a lot at the time, but it's unique to the era that it's in. It's a painful story. The chief rabbi of Israel, who had previously been the chief rabbi of Ireland, Rabbi Goren, he was traveling, and he went to Europe just after World War II. And he went into monasteries and nunneries. And he went to save children, Jewish children. And he went in, and there were many places where he said, "I'm a rabbi, and we know you have children here, give them back to us." And they refused to let him in. He refused to let them see the children. And then after that trip to Europe, he went on to America. And he went to Chicago. And in Chicago at the time, a young boy, Beryl Wine. And Beryl Wine was sitting in the shul, in the school, and Rav Goren came to speak to them. And Rav Goren started crying. And this is the message that he said. He said, "There were children who were Jewish children who I went to save, to raise them on a path of Yiddishkeit. And I was not successful. But you are Jewish children who are having a Jewish education. And the future of the Jewish people depends on you." That's all he said. And maybe he said more, but that's what Rav Beryl Wine remembered. That's a Musa talk, which one phrase can transform an entire person. It could penetrate the heart in a way that reading Svarim upon Svarim can't penetrate, because it's real, raw emotion. That you realize something is right now happening, and it affects you, and you can make a difference. It's so interesting to me, just on a personal level. So Beryl Wine, he went on to be a lawyer. He grew up, he became a lawyer. And then at one point, through other events as well, but he also reflected back on that moment, and he left law and he went on to be a rabbi. Because he said, "I need to make a profound difference." And that was a turning point for him, and he remembered that. Usually it's not like that. Usually when you learn Musa, you learn, you're inspired, you understand. It builds slowly but surely. Sometimes there are moments like that, but they're unique. I just want to mention on that point. When around the time you were 3-4 years old, there was the uprooting of Gush Katif. And it was very, very raw emotion, which I had never experienced until then or since then. It was a whole belief system about communities upon communities of Yirei Shamayim individuals who had built yeshivas and Talmudei Torah, and they built up a whole area of the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the emunah that the people had there was incomparable. Like, they lived there with such faith in Hashem. And to think that Hashem was going to allow or enable them to be uprooted from their homes was painful, painful. And this yeshiva, together with many, many, many other hundreds of thousands of Jews, did what they could within the law to prevent it from happening. There were mass tefillot, which took place in different places. There was a human chain that went from Gush Katif to the Kotel. Could you imagine? A human chain that went from Gush Katif to the Kotel. Unbelievable things happened. And it was, we spent Shabbos there as a yeshiva. Like, it was a lot of effort that went in. So there's a lot of stories around it. But either way, when I think of the Holocaust, I don't cry and get emotional. I understand it. I learn about it. Sometimes if I read a particular story, I could get worked up. But when I hear a song that was playing at that time, or once I saw a video of a clip of the actual where the police were pulling people out of their homes, I couldn't take it. I burst out crying. It was raw emotion. And it was funny to me, because relatively to the Holocaust, I mean, like, relative to Chorban Bayis, Shane, like, what are we comparing here? But I lived through it. And I was there when it happened. And I experienced it, not to the same degree as people who were in there experienced it. I was on the outside. I was just nearby. But I experienced it. People came from Gush Katif to Keren B'Yavneh because they didn't have anywhere to go. It was Ben Azmanim. Families were pulled out of their home, and the government didn't have a solution for everyone where they were going to go, and an entire yeshuv came to Keren B'Yavneh, and they were in the dorms. And many of them were sorted out by Rosh Chodesh Elul, but there were 4 families that weren't. And there were 4 families that were here for Elul as well, living in the King David on the ground floor. Two rooms per family. It was 3 families. 2, 2, and 2 were families. All the boys were on the top 2 floors, and the bottom of the King David were families. They had nowhere to go. One woman there was a professor in Bar Ilan. She had uprooted her home, and she was standing there, staying in the dorms. One family stayed here for the whole year. In office. In the rooms in office. And he still come, until Corona, he used to come every Friday to learn in the Beis Medrash in Keren B'Yavon, just to give Hakaras HaTov for the Makom Torah. He would come here to learn. And now they even Yad Binyamin, they would come. Anyway, why I'm teaching that story is, there are some times where you live through something. Rav Beryl Wein lived through the Holocaust, alongside. I lived alongside. And that's raw emotion, and that could transform you. You could have epiphany from that. But our regular learning of Musa is not that powerful. It can't be, because we're not experiencing something at the moment. We're just learning ideas. And so one person may come and give up hope. And he might say, well, it's not really having an effect. Because look, like the story of Beryl Wein, that was amazing. Look at that. That could have a transformative effect. But like me, I just read and I understand and nothing big happens. So remember that story of Rabbi Akiva, where each drop, you don't see that it's having an effect, but it is. That was what inspired Rabbi Akiva himself. It's having an effect because it transformed. A person sometimes gives up hope from Musa. However, listen to this quote from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Al yipol lev ha'adam belomdo musar ve'eneinu mitpael. Don't give up hope if you learn Musa and it doesn't bring you to emotion. Ve'ein roshem benafsho. And you don't feel that it had an effect on your soul. Leshanot darko, to change your ways. Yeida ne'emana. You should know in a real way. Im ki lo yigale le'enei basara roshem. Although you externally can't see that it's having an effect on you, however, your inner world, your inner mind, is able to identify it. And with time, as long as you continue the learning, it gathers together and all those very, very slight imprints build and build and build. And you're transformed as an individual. And you never noticed it. You didn't see it happening. There was not one point where you could identify that Seder Musar on Hey Tevet. That was the one that you can't say that. You can't even identify when it is. Because you can't see it. But slowly but surely it has an effect, an effect, an effect, and it builds you, and you meet someone a year or two later and you're a different person. And then when you meet them and you realize what they're talking to you about, and you say like, no, I'm not there. But you remember that when you used to talk to those people, that's what you used to talk about. You say like, what happened? I've learned Musa. But it didn't have an effect on me. Kanaret did. It has an effect. It's so subtle that you don't see the change, that it has an effect. Time and experience can testify that someone who learns Musa, as long as he learns it consistently, he will rise up in his level, in his thoughts, and in his actions. That's Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter's book is called Or Yisrael. It wasn't written by him. I mean, it wasn't ordered by him. It was just letters that he wrote. And this is letter 10. Ein kol siba ba'olam lachshov kifag kocho v'tamo shel limud ze kayom. Derech yi'ila yoter lishmira al tzurat ha'adam v'kiyum ha'mitzvot ein. V'adarabba, ima tzukufam robot ba'yot kiflaim lotoshiya b'limud Musa. This is the path and the only well-tested long-term path for a person to transform himself through learning Musa on a daily basis. And if there are more issues going on, then it's even more of an obligation that a person has to learn Musa to strengthen himself. Lo kol adam mechunan b'koach machshava yotzeret or b'koach hitla tuta regesh. Koach yotzer shehu nachalat kol echad ve'echad hu ha'itbononut. This is very interesting. Some people think that Musa or Avodas Hashem machshava, it's either something you have or you don't have. Some people are born with a sensitivity towards it, some people are not. So he's a Musa person. I'm not a Musa person. And that's a mistake. Avodat Hashem is not something which you're either built for or not built for. Some people are built with a taste towards certain things and a taste not towards other things. You don't know what that is. You just try and test and see what happens. Some person tries a certain flavor, they don't like it. They know, okay, I didn't like that. They didn't decide that. They didn't work on it. They just discovered it. Some things you just discover. But Avodas Hashem is not something which you just discover. Albeit, it could be that for some people it's more natural. And some people it's less natural. Meaning, for some people it's easier, and some people it takes more work. But that doesn't lower the obligation of anybody. It doesn't mean that I'm suited or not suited. It means that it might be easier or harder, but that doesn't mean there's less of an obligation. Lahavdil. Just like if you take a test in school, for some people it's easier, for some people it's harder, but everyone's taking the test. Some people have to work harder for it, some people don't have to work harder for it. Avodas Hashem, some people have to work harder. Now, objectively, it's not a problem from Hashem's perspective. Because he doesn't judge, it's not like a test in school where it's about the grade. It's about how much effort you're putting in. So it doesn't make a difference really where you are on the spectrum. It's all about how much you're devoted to it. But that Ashura is saying, don't think that if you're not naturally more enthusiastic and emotional and you're more naturally like goal-orientated and driven, that you're any less obligated in this matter. There's a path which is hitbononut, contemplation. A person who contemplates will awaken within himself avodat Hashem. If a person doesn't, he'll miss it. He won't notice it. It'll bypass him. Ein lecha adam shelo yuchal la'agia lehitrakzut mitoch menuchat ha'nefesh v'matzav ha'nafshi v'mahalach ma'asav v'magamav chayav. So this is an important phrase. Let's just break it down into sections. Every single person can reach a place where when they calm down and they focus, they can identify their state, their spiritual state, by looking at their actions and their goals. That was a lot in that phrase. Let's just read it again. Every person, if they're calm, can bring themselves to be calm, in a calm state, and can focus on their spiritual state by identifying their actions and their aspirations. If you look at what am I looking for, what am I trying to do, what's my goals in life, and you look at what am I doing physically, what are my actions, if you pay attention to those two things, your actions and your goals, that shows you where you are and where you want to be. If you look at those two things, and you do it in a time when you're calm, not like on the rush, on the go, I don't have time, quickly, I don't even figure out what, you do it in a calm way, and you focus on it, you will be able to identify where you're holding, what your spiritual state is. When you ask someone, how do you understand this? They say, I don't know. And they said, I don't know even before you finished asking the question. And they didn't mitbonen. They didn't contemplate it. But if a person does contemplate, well, look at your actions throughout the day and look at what your goals are. I don't know, I don't have any goal. You probably do have goals, you just haven't thought about it. So if I haven't thought, it means I don't have. And you probably do have, because you're acting in certain ways towards certain things. Just pay attention. What is it that you're hoping for? What are you looking for in life? What are you working towards? I didn't think about it. Okay, but think about it now. In a calm state and focus. You'll discover what your goals are, you'll notice what your actions are, and then you'll identify what your state, your spiritual state is at this moment. I'll just read it again in Hebrew. Ein lecha adam shelo yuchal lahagia lehitrachzut, lehitrakez, mitoch menuchat nefesh, v'matzavo hanafshi, v'mahalach ma'asav u'magamat chayav. Hitbononut kazot yesh ba mishum yitzira mamash. And here's where you get to be creative. In a way that no one else in the world can. Only you can. Any other thing that you read or hear is someone else. It's not you. Maybe it will affect you. Maybe it will inspire you. Maybe it will annoy you. I don't know. But it's external to you. The only time when you're being creative is when you're looking into your inner world. In a calm way, focused way, looking at your actions and your goals. No one else in the world can do that. And that's you being creative because you are discovering it. You're not looking at someone else's model. You're looking at your own model. Who are you? Who am I? Where am I today? That's how you begin the Cheshbon Nefesh. That's how you begin Avodat Hashem. And that's what the core of Musar is. Meaning all of the reading of Musar and all of the hearing Musar drushes, the goal of all of that is to bring you to this point where you contemplate your inner world and you see where you're holding. That's the goal of it all. So if a person says, I finished Mitzvah Shisharim twice, three times, four times, Shkoyach, so what? Did it bring you to inner thought? It's better to pause and only read the introduction once, and you say, wow, what is the purpose of my life? And you start contemplating, and from there you carry on. That's worth a lot more than all the external investigation that a person does. Hidbonut kazot yeshba yitzira mamash ha'adam atzmo mitchadesh. What's the yitzira? It transforms you. As you start to become aware of your inner world has changed. You deepen your goals, your aspirations. You pay attention to your actions and you're able to uplift your actions. It's a transformation of the self. Instead of a person looking at themselves as, I don't know, that's just what I do. Why do you do it? I don't know. What is this? It just happened. The subconscious just brought it. What is subconscious? Subconscious is not something which is impossible to understand what it is. It's just things that act on you from within that you haven't yet discovered what they are. But you can discover what they are if you're mitponen. I'll give a very simple example. Let's say someone annoyed me before I walked into this room. And then someone else in the room says to me something which is neutral, and I shout out at them. Right now, if I'm not aware of the fact that I'm in a bad state from that person just outside, then you'll ask me, why are you so upset with me? I say, I don't know. The subconscious just brought it out. Like, I don't know where it came from. It just is. But if I'm aware of my actions and I'm aware of my states, I'll be able to link it. I would say, yeah, because I spoke to that person and that put me in a bad mood. And because I was in a bad mood, then even though you didn't say anything problematic, but I couldn't lash out at them, so I lashed out at you instead. And you'll be able to be aware of that. And then if you go a little bit deeper, you say, one second, can someone else put me in a bad mood? Or did I invite them in? No one else could put me in a bad mood. There's no such thing. Only someone who's very reactive would say a phrase like that. But someone who's proactive, meaning they're aware of their inner world and they're able to be in control of their inner world, they'll be aware that even if someone else says something harmful to me, I can choose whether to let that harmful statement affect my inner state, or I can choose to say, I know I have a strong enough inner world, I know who I am, maybe they have an issue which they're upset about, and that's why they're saying it, but that doesn't have to affect my mood. So if I'm not aware of my inner world, then I will just say, he put me in a bad mood. And then I'll take it out on someone else and not know where that came from. That's someone who's not aware of his inner world. The more a person's aware of his inner world, then he'll be able to say, he's upset, he's angry. That's an invitation for me to be angry as well, but I don't have to accept the invitation. If you're not aware of your inner world, you'll just say, I don't know, just things are happening inside me. But once you become aware of your inner world and you're aware what forces affect you and what ways they do, you'll be able to build a healthy inner world that it won't affect you from other people's moods affecting you or influencing you. Because you're aware of the inner world. So really, there's no such thing. I mean, there is a thing of subconscious, but the subconscious is only an area you haven't researched. But, well, the more you research yourself and understand your inner workings, the more you can understand what's happening and what's affecting you. Just say one last phrase, which I'm not going to explain, but hopefully we'll go into it more in detail in the future. People erroneously, that wasn't what I was looking for, but that's what came out, mistakenly think that their feeling is them and it's objective and it's who they are and it's where they are and that's it. I just feel that way. You hear that phrase, I just feel that way. As if I can't control my feelings and I'm stuck with the feeling that I have and zeb. When a person hasn't learned Musar, then he becomes very vulnerable because other people can affect him and he just feels that way. Malasot. He becomes very affected by others. The more you learn Musar, the more you learn, like it says in Sefer HaChinuch, on the mitzvah of don't feel jealous, that a person, through his thoughts, can control his emotions. When you understand that what you're thinking causes you to feel that way, and when you think negative thoughts, it leads to a negative emotion. And if you reverse the negative thoughts by choosing to be mitbonen, choosing to learn and understand and think about positive thoughts, then that will generate a positive emotion. So really you understand that you are in control of your inner world. Then not only do you become aware of your inner world, but you actually become the master of your inner world. You're able to direct it and control it in a way which is going to bring you close to Hashem. And then you become a real Eved Hashem because there's a person there. There's a you. Before you learn Musa, you're not even aware that you have a you. You just acted upon from the outside. He led me to do this and he led me to do that and he made me feel that. And who are you? I'm the one who's being pulled and pushed by everyone. But strings above me are making me move in all different directions. But once you learn Musa and you learn what makes you do what you do, and then you learn how you can take control of your inner world, a different world entirely. Then you are able to start serving Hashem. Instead of being acted upon, you become the Baal HaBayit. You gain an independence. You recognize you have Bechira Chofshis. And there's a you who can serve HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, so that was just I just wanted to throw that out. Maybe we'll discuss that more in the future, but that's the purpose of Musa. And it's well worth investing in.
Thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure, Chofshis.